Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
But it's more than that, isn't it? This room, this is hard. Dinner. Outside with Herb. I think something's wrong here, Wanda.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the MCU Diaries. It's a podcast dedicated to every Marvel Studios series on Disney+. So sit back, relax, and let's break down Earth's mightiest heroes. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the MCU Diaries. Today we're talking episode 103 of WandaVision, now in color, and I have to make an admission. I have to admit something to you. I love the monkeys. It may be a sad admission, but I love the monkeys. I grew up, as I said in the first episode of the MCU Diaries, watching Nick at Night, and in later years of Nick at Night, the monkeys, the television series, was part of it. Now, for those of you who are much younger than me, you don't know anything about the monkeys, probably, and you probably definitely don't know about the television show, the monkeys. Just do yourself a favor, like, and Google it, and Google how the monkeys were formed. And the reason why I'm talking about the monkeys is because they are featured at the end of this episode singing Daydream Believer. And it's quite an apropos song for this episode. So let's get into it, shall we? But before we do get into this episode, I want to remind you that you can find everything that Mary and myself do at maryandblake.com. Whether it is all of our podcasts featuring such shows as Bridgerton or Outlander or This Is Us that we are currently doing at this moment, are we even doing a Harry Potter podcast called The Potterverse? We got a lot going on over there. And of course, the essay of this episode is located at maryandblake.com as well. I will include this essay in the show notes for this podcast. Just look up the MCU Diaries in the blog version. You'll be able to see all of the articles that are there. So check that out. Get in touch with us at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com or just search us at Mary and Blake for all of the different versions of the social medias that are available to you. We're on all of them. But for now, let's get into the show. So episode 103 of WandaVision is entitled Now in Color because there has been a big transition at the end of episode 102 into 103 that the show has now formed a sense of something like the Brady Bunch. We are moving directly into the 70s. The hairstyles have changed. The clothing has changed. The set has changed to resemble that god-awful taste of the 70s. And the show is evolving, again, into color. So, in addition to that, this episode tacks on a little bit more sitcom hijinks, but the real main focus, as we always try to look at here at the MCU Diaries, is not at the sitcom hijinks or the necessarily the plot of what is happening, because most of it is largely irrelevant. What we're looking at here, at least in this episode, is exposing the very emotional framework of a very real prison for the mind. Whether that mind is for Vision or that mind is for Wanda, there's a prison being formed here in Westview, and it is being exposed. So let's get weird, shall we? WandaVision, especially in this episode, I think it's finally starting to, like as we said, reveal its framework, but it's also starting to show its emotional core, and it's doing so in a very cool and funky way, especially giving us more of Geraldine, who is Monica, and having her interact with Wanda at the end of this episode, leaving us in a very curious position of what happens to Geraldine or Monica. I think from now on, I'll just call her Monica, just because it's just going to be easier that way. What happens to Monica? What happens to Vision? What happens to the show at the end of this episode? What happens to Wanda? WandaVision is definitely starting to come into its own. And again, not just because Monica has been voted off sitcom island. No, I brought up the monkeys earlier because, as we said earlier, the episode ends with the song Daydream Believer being played at the end once Monica has been ejected, or she is off the, again, off sitcom island here, like Survivor. And I love the lyrics to Daydream Believer, and they are very significant to what's happening here. And the meaning behind the song Daydream Believer is going to surprise you, but I will read you the lyrics first. Oh, I could hide neath the wings of the bluebird as she sings. The 6 o'clock alarm would never ring, but it rings and I rise. Wipe the sleep out of my eyes. My shaven razor's cold and it stings. Cheer up, sleepy Jean. Oh, what can it mean that to a daydream believer and a homecoming queen? Listen, the monkeys may be closer to this side of Weird Al Yankovic than Bob Dylan. And trust me, if you Google the monkeys and how they came together, and they were like the first corporate formed band of the modern era, they may not be Bob Dylan. They are not very serious performers. But I will say that Daydream Believer is a perfect fit for the current confusion and the assured trauma that Wanda and Vision will be enduring, guaranteed, sooner rather than later. Daydream Believer, the lyrics I just read, it's actually about a man who blankly stares into a bathroom mirror, and he's subtly contemplating the dissolution of his once happy marriage. And instead of reveling in romance, his marriage, which is now populated by a daydream believer and a homecoming queen, now only thrives on the love of material and money, which is really terrible when you think about it, and sad, so, so sad to have this moment of realization when you stare at yourself in the mirror and realize you are not the person that you thought you were. And again, this is appropriate for the current state of Wanda and Vision's relationship. Not necessarily because they are reduced to the love of money, but because the entire foundation for their current relationship, as it is made, as it is based right now in Westview, in WandaVision itself, their relationship is based on a gigantic lie. Vision is absolutely dead. And while there has not been a 100% confirmation on how he has been reanimated for the sake of this TV show, there is no two ways around the fact that he is a dead man walking. And his very consciousness is being manipulated by Wanda. Getting back to Daydream Believer, if you wanted to make the argument that Vision is the Daydream Believer in this scenario, then I think that's a fair argument. You're probably right. He literally stares blankly at Wanda and freely admits something is wrong here. And instead of fessing up, however, Wanda resets the reality and everything transitions back to Wanda's picture-perfect sitcom. All while Vision continues on under the thin veil of self-determination. This scene, yes, it is dynamic and it is one that represents, I think, a lot of what WandaVision is trying to do, but it's, I think, one of the first intellectually honest, emotionally true, and viscerally revealing moments that WandaVision has given us, the viewers, to date, at least up until this episode. Wanda's actions are wrong, they're reprehensible. In fact, I would probably argue that they're unconscionable. Under normal circumstances, there could be an argument made that there is probably no coming back from the actions to which that she is subjecting the residents of Westview, and most of all, the love of her life. And as noted at the end of the episode, Westview is not just made up of some TV land environment that exists in a theoretical space of Wanda's head. Of course, I will say this. I was very, very, very prepared for Wanda to be in some kind of torture chamber at a S.W.O.R.D. headquarters, and Westview was a completely disassociated plane of thought which allowed her to escape their treatment. Oh, no. No, no, no. This town is real. Its people are real. And Wanda is forcing them, possibly against their will, all to play a part in her happily ever after daydream. Then again, when everything you love in this world is ripped from you, there's no amount of clinical diagnosis that can appropriately quantify that level of depression and devastation, which is why it's fair to say that Wanda's actions are unconscionable under normal circumstance. But this is not normal circumstance. Everything has been ripped from Wanda, her life, her husband, and her mental health, all in one fell swoop by old purple chin himself, Thanos. And I reference Thanos in this episode only because, yes, he did murder Vision. But because I believe Wanda's scene with Thanos in Avengers Endgame is way underappreciated, and you're going to hear it right here.
You took everything from me.
I don't even know who you are.
You will.
This is a big deal. This is a big deal. WandaVision is good television because it's expertly dressed and directed in a fun twist on a normally formulaic genre of film. Though it's more accurate to say WandaVision is excellent because it builds on Wanda's trauma of having everything she loves in her life ripped away, and it explores what happens to someone with immense power who suffers a catastrophic collapse in their mental health. As we noted in the first episode of the MCU Diaries, Wanda is literally the most powerful being in the MCU, and you can make an argument for Captain Marvel. I'm glad to hear it. But Wanda is immensely powerful. And can you imagine being that powerful and having that moment of revenge on the one person who has destroyed every tenet you hold dear right at your infinitely potent fingertips? And he says, "I don't even know who you are." He totally invalidates her entire existence. He invalidates her love. He invalidates her trauma. So it's only reasonable that Wanda authors a world where she can live happily ever after here in Westview. Vision, however, is not the only aspect of Wanda's life that has been torn away from her grasp. It's also Pietro. And I must say, good on showrunner Jack Schaefer for bringing up Wanda's brother into the mix, because his death in Avengers Age of Ultron, I think, is also an underplayed aspect of Wanda's life in the MCU, and I was hoping they would address it in some form or another. It's a fantastic intro and insight into Wanda's grief in her life.
I'm a twin. I had a brother. His name was Pietro.
He was killed by Ultron, wasn't he?
What did you say?
She's new to town. Brand new.
This acknowledgement and inclusion allows for some real texture to Wanda's presence in WandaVision by opening up a previously unexplored avenue into grief. Yes, in Ultron, Wanda grieves for Pietro, and it's very sad when she finds out that he dies. Hashtag spoilers. But the films themselves, the films proper, are simply too big. They have too many characters, too many things to do, especially for a side character like Wanda, despite the fact her being probably the most powerful being in the MCU universe. That aside, they have too many things to get going on. And I also think that there is probably some, politicking happening between Marvel Studios and 20th Century Fox at the time, because they were shared characters. I imagine that Pietro's death was intentional for the narrative of the story, but I also think it was intentional for the business side. Also, that aside, after Age of Ultron, Wanda's grief and the relationship with her brother is ignored. I mean, vastly ignored. And after Joss Whedon directed Age of Ultron, it was the Russo brothers who really started to form and decide the narrative for the Avengers, and in conjunction with the writers and Kevin Feige, but they are the ones who helped put it to screen. And it was as if Pietro died and the Russo brothers were just only too happy to ground Wanda's presence by jumpstarting a romantic relationship with Vision, which seemed to appear out of nowhere in Captain America: Civil War. Their relationship seemed like it happened because it needed to happen. That does not invalidate what we're watching here in WandaVision, which we discussed last episode. They actually have some real characterization, finally. I believe that they are in love. I believe Wanda's grief. I believe that she helped, or that she did create this world to bring back Vision in her life. And of course, Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen are incredibles. They can sell anything. But their relationship in Captain America: Civil War happened because it happened in the comics. And that's what it needed to do. And maybe it was a distraction from the fact that we really can't talk about Pietro and Quicksilver here anymore. So let's whistle past the graveyard. But in the continuation of last episode's theme of control and what Wanda will do to control Westview, we see Wanda struggling with control over the push and pull of her fantasy and her reality once again. When the very real contractions start to take effect on her body, the power goes out in Westview. When her water breaks, Wanda makes it rain in her house. These are little slip-ups or glitches in the Matrix for you real nerds when Wanda loses her solid footing in her show. So it seems only natural that while Wanda is lost in the grief of Pietro's memory as she mournfully sings a Sokovian lullaby, she also appears to loosen her authoritarian grip on the town's facade. As if having a subtle moment of clarity, Geraldine, or Monica, remembers her own reality as well. As the history Wanda is so desperately, so trying to erase. Ultron existed. Pietro existed. Pietro died. And something is wrong here. Whether or not Monica falls back under Wanda's spell once Wanda regains control over her illusion, that is a debatable point. But I'd like to think that Monica had a moment of clarity, only for it to be clouded over and be genuinely confused about Wanda's response to that brief moment. And she asks, "What did you say?" And she tries to move past it, like it didn't happen. Then, of course, once she's forcefully evacuated from Westview back into the hands of S.W.O.R.D., she has a sudden awakening of consciousness and reality once she removed herself, or she was removed, from Wanda's sphere of influence. And let's not get ahead of ourselves here, though, because we do know that there is some clarity for particular characters in Wanda's sphere, and those characters are Agnes and Herb. Agnes and Herb are fascinating. Yes, of course, Catherine Hahn is incredible. I mean, just pitch perfect in every way for this show. A total match for the weird tone. And when she winks at Vision, talking about the macrame or whatever it is, it warms my soul. And it should warm your soul as well. But the scene is important because it alludes to the notion that both Herb and Agnes are well aware of their actual realities outside of Wanda's influence, yet they're still playing along. Agnes always seems to pop in at the right moment with whatever Wanda needs, and ingredients for dinner, or in this particular case, a little warning for Vision to watch out for Monica. Well, Geraldine. Agnes knows that Geraldine is not part of this shared story. She knows. But she also wants to spare Vision the truth behind his faux reality, too. Her plea to Herb is not one of anger or disgust when he starts to talk to Vision about who they are, where they are, what they are, and why they know that Geraldine ain't part of this story. Rather, it seemed as if it was out of pity or, dare I say, even regret. Is it possible that Agnes helped Wanda create this reality and Agnes is doing whatever she can to help facilitate Wanda's mental health? Are they both damaged souls who require each other's assistance? We shall see. But Agnes is far, far more lucid and aware of the situation than any of us, I think, are aware at this moment. And speaking of waiting to see, Wanda's children also seem to be real as well. They may be a manipulation of matter, as Wanda is wont to do, but their sudden growth does seem to be out of Wanda's control. Wanda's pains with contraction and birth suggest her reality mixing with her story, and it will be interesting to see if their growth remains independent of Wanda's abilities. So, now we get to the apropos of nothing for WandaVision, episode 103, now in color. First, in three episodes of television, we have moved from influences like The Dick Van Dyke Show to Bewitched, and now The Brady Bunch. Please, please, please be Full House next. And all of the meta-commentary that is necessary with Elizabeth Olsen and her more famous sisters, which were the child stars of the actual Full House. That would just be delicious. It may be gimmicky, second, and certainly flashy, but the aspect ratio changing from 4:3 to the more modern film and MCU style of 16:9 at the end of the episode was a nerdgasm to end all nerdgasms. I love when television shows get creative with their visual language, and Wanda, so far, is knocking it right out of the park. Fourth, more insight into Vision's slow recognition that not all is right. He wants to name his son Billy after William Shakespeare because all the world's a stage. Fifth, the commercial for Hydra soap seems to be more of a commentary on Wanda's current condition as opposed to her past, which the previous commercials have focused on. Take a break. Get some rest, escape to a world of your own, and find your inner goddess with Hydra. You know, Hydra, the group that just gave her, Wanda, the godlike powers she has at this moment. Lastly, Westview's slogan is home. It's where you make it. Is this another reference to the House of M, that incredible storyline we talked about in the first episode of the MCU Diaries? All in all, this was a fantastic episode. Again, I think WandaVision is stepping into its own. It's finding its identity. Its identity is one of being weird and accepting the weird, but dealing with emotional trauma. You may watch these episodes and wonder what all the Easter eggs are, may wonder what all the little callbacks are, and you may want to figure out all the little things that the director and the writers are putting in. Speaking of that, by the way, the writer for this episode, I did not mention at the top, I apologize, the writer is Megan McDonnell. I know you do not know that name, you should not know that name, because this is actually her first credit. This is the first credit that Megan McDonnell has. She has not been officially credited with anything else. WandaVision, now in color, the first episode of television she has ever written. I got to tell you, she did a really good job. It's well-structured, well-paced, creepy enough. Excellent job by Megan McDonnell. Well, Megan McDonnell. There you go. You got to get the name right, Blake. Megan McDonnell. So as you're watching this, again, you may want to dissect every little thing that happens in the sitcom aspect of it and try to find out what each word means and whatever. And that is just something that is what you want to do. Good on you. There are a billion articles about WandaVision breaking down all of these little Easter eggs and all of these little meanings. The thing to focus on, as we discussed in the first two episodes of the MCU Diaries, is to focus on the emotional undercurrent. What is happening? Why is this happening? And how will it affect our main protagonists? How will this affect Wanda and Vision? What will come of these two? And when you start looking at this with a more discerning eye, you're seeing an immediate, or not immediate, a more gradual conflict starting to brew. Vision is getting more awareness. Wanda is trying to prevent that awareness. Ultimately, this is a bill that someone's got to pay. My thought is that it will be Wanda. I don't know yet, but someone's got to pay this bill. And these two are coming at each other like two trains colliding. They're just, I'd say, about a mile apart right now. But they're chugging full speed ahead. So that is that. That is the end of this episode, ladies and gents. It is time to close it out. And you know what? Just in celebration of all things that I love of the monkeys, let's close it out to Daydream Believer, shall we? Yes. Oh, there it is. There is some Mickey Dolenz and Davy Jones. Oh, yeah. I'm in. There's the monkeys, man. Songbird of a generation, you know, except for the Beatles. You know, the monkeys were actually the answer. They were the American answer to the Beatles. There was a lot of competition at that time in the mid-60s, and a lot of people felt that the British invasion was too foreign, and Americans needed their own answer to all that. So the monkeys were the corporate-induced answer to the Beatles. Anyway, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the MCU Diaries and enjoying everything that I have to say on these essays. Of course, these essays are all available at maryandblake.com. Just look up the MCU Diaries, the blog version. You'll find them all there. And in the meantime, If you want to help support an independently produced podcast and an independently owned company like Mary and Blake Media, please head to jointhenerdclan.com where you get all different kinds of great bonuses and premium episodes and premium podcasts and book clubs and this amazing community of nerds who love what they love. They are not ashamed of it and they want to talk about it in depth. Go there. Go to jointhenerdclan.com. Check it out and enjoy the fun that we have there. Well, until then, ladies and gents, cheer up, Sleepy Jean. What can it mean to a daydream believer and a homecoming queen? I'll see you next episode.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.